Welcome to the Tin Biscuit Podcast. Today we've got two special guests, which are
Joanne Mitchell
and I'm Dominic Brunt.
Well, thanks for coming on, guys. You're better known for Paddy, as in Emmerdale.
Yeah.
And you've done some acting before, though, haven't you, Joanne?
Yeah, I've done my fair share of acting. Yeah.
Yeah. You've been in Emmerdale.
I've done Emmerdale. I've done Coronation Street. All the sort of
Casualty.
The Casualties, the Holbys, all the sort of TV favourites, really.
But today's going to be about the horror side of things.
Absolutely.
Because you've got your own film company, isn't it? Is it Mitchell and Brunt or Brunt and Mitchell?
Mitchell Brunt Films.
Yeah, Mitchell Brunt Films. And better known for Before Dawn, Bait, and Attack of the Adult Babies. Yeah. So, like, what got you into horror in the first place, both of you? What formulated it all?
Well, I've always been into horror. From the age of maybe 12, 13, definitely 13. And a friend growing up called Lee Whitaker, his dad owned Accrington Video Stall, so we could watch whatever we wanted, and there was no certification on anything then, so we just went through the shop. And that was our go-to genre. And then ever since it has been, you know, I've always been to the festivals and watched films, and my film collection is horror films, and that and kind of European cinema as well, and lots of box sets. But that's always been the case. But and then when Joe had the original idea for Before Dawn, we kind of looked into making it, really, because that's what it came from. There was an argument between me watching rubbishy zombie films and Joe saying there's no substance to them and surely they could be a bit deeper. So I was like, well, what would you do then? And then it went from there, really.
So what sort of films, when it was certificated, was that when, like, you went to the, like, sort of video shop? What sort of, was it like zombie flesh eaters?
Yeah, exactly that. You know, Dawn of the Dead, Evil Dead, all of that. And I've still dragged the old VHSs around with me for years and years and years. I've got them in a little stack up there. A particular favourite, Shogun Assassin, and, you know, just stuff like that, really. All the usual.
Yeah. Have you both got a sort of favourite horror film that you both like, then? Or
Well, for me, I think it's just got to be the scariest one, and the scariest one for me is The Exorcist. That's my scariest movie.
It is for me. Yeah. I still can't really watch it on like my own.
No, I can't at all. It took, I think, I watched it, I think a friend of ours, well, when I was a little, how old was I? I must have been really young. And we were a group of friends at their house, and they'd managed to get a VHS copy, and we watched it during the day. We were completely underage. And I remember that was it. I never slept for about 5 years after that. And constantly going into my mum and dad's room saying, I'm scared. And
I remember even up until maybe 15 years ago.
It was a couple of years
ago. Was it really?
Yeah.
When you rewatched it?
I rewatched it.
Before then, you couldn't
look
at the front cover.
No, I wouldn't have.
You didn't like the front cover on show. You have to turn it away.
It's such an impact. And I think it's because it is about a young girl, isn't it? And it's about, you know, all those things that you can, as a young girl at the time that I was, I was relating to it, and it was possible, and it was all the unknown and the fear and all those kind of things. And I went to quite a religious school as well, so it was, you know, it just set my imagination on a sort of...
Yeah, I mean, I believe in God and things like that, so it hit home with that. And it's just, it's got an air about the film, I think. I think it's got some sort of weirdness about it.
Yeah. And it's so beautifully done.
Yeah.
It's brilliantly done. And then I rewatched it. It was only a couple of years ago that I rewatched it. And I watched it with different eyes, basically, because having made horror and watched loads of horror since, I really appreciated it as an incredible piece of filmmaking.
So, you thought, because you made horror, you were sort of and appreciated it more?
Yeah. I could sort of just take a step back from the actual emotional content of it, I think. Even though I still found it scary, I did, and I still do. But it wasn't as intense as it was sort of 30 years ago, whatever.
Yeah.
It was.
And what's your favourite horror film? Is it? I take it's going to be one of the zombie films.
Yeah, I really like Dawn of the Dead. That's the one I really, really love, I think. I think it always has been, even just from the colour of the zombies and the colour of the blood and the concept of the story of getting them in the shopping mall and running with it, and the editing and chop, 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 you know, just brilliant.
Was it Tom Savini who did the special effects on that one?
Yeah. That's right, yeah. I just really love that film. And recently as well, the newer horror films, I've really enjoyed things like It Follows and The Babadook. Because we watch a lot of horror together now as well. Yeah, things like that. But always, there's always something every year that comes out, especially at Fright Fest, that we watch and go, oh, yeah, it's amazing.
And it is incredible because I think it's one of those, you can just go anywhere with horror, I think, with the yeah, stories. Yeah. And I think that's what, there's no boundaries. And I think that's why it's so fascinating and interesting. And you think, God, who's going to come up with the next crazy story? And I suppose that's why the festivals are so exciting, because you don't know what the content is going to be and how, you know, they're going to portray something or something that has already been done, but they're going to do it a different kind of way or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's a new story in a new environment.
I was going to ask you both about, what do you think of the modern horror compared to the 80s horror and 70s horror? Do you think it's getting more in a way of just for a shock value? Because I did a challenge once. I had to watch a horror movie a day every year. So
I knew that. Yeah.
I did 365 days of,
wow. Yeah, I followed that. Yeah.
Of horror. But I thought the independent people on YouTube, the short ones, had a lot more going about. I mean, I wasn't a big fan of It Follows, per se, because I think it's just out there to shock. And do you think it's what the studios want the public to have? Just the people in the Nights of Cinema just want the shock value and the jump value and see how gory you can be?
I'm not into... I do like the odd jump sting. I think Evil Dead is based around that as well, but it's got more to it. It's got its own universe and its own soul. But I saw a really good quote from somebody that was doing stand-up comedy, and he said about horror and the jump horrors, and said, well, if I ran into the audience and tickled you all, that doesn't mean I'm funny. You know, it's just the jump stings are just jump stings. It's nothing to do with the story and the tension. But I definitely differ from you about It Follows. I didn't think it was like that. I even thought when I saw Hereditary, I thought that was completely reductive of loads of different horror films. And I think it stole from it, It Follows and The Babadook and lots of other films, and just got its hand into wherever it wanted to and then reproduced it as a storyline. You know, and like I said, it was... I just think it's lots of people banging their heads, and then at the end of it, somebody becomes the king of somebody in eight people in a treehouse that are nude, and it's a preposterous story.
Hereditary.
Yeah, Hereditary. I hated it.
It's a real divide, that one, isn't it?
Yeah, people absolutely loved it.
I watched it on an aeroplane and went, I've just watched this film, and what was that about? It was awful. And I went, I've just seen that film as well. And I didn't know anything about it. But then there's
horror friends that just think it's the best thing since sliced bread.
So that's good, isn't it, I suppose?
I mean, it's all right, but it's certainly not the best thing, and things like that. But was it done by the same people who did The Witch, was it? Was it done by the same company? Or did it have some link to them?
I don't know.
No, I don't know. Okay,
I watch horror films. I never watch the credits or anything. I've got friends of mine go, oh yeah, the wardrobe person on that was the same person that did the special effects on that independent film from Tanzania. And I was like, I don't know, I just watched them.
Yeah. And then Babadook was fantastic, wasn't it? That was one of my favourites.
It was good, that.
I loved it. I just thought she was Jennifer Kent. And The Witch,
The Witch was good.
Yeah, brilliant.
Very good, yeah.
Yeah.
So there's some good stuff out there. I think there's some really good... horror. I mean, I thought It Follows, that really creeped me out. I think I really like that. Yeah.
If you were eating, we are having lunch as well. I'm like drinking tea, apologise for the crunch. And it is all healthy, by the way, before anyone starts. The last horror film I watched that I thought was good was Slender Man. I was quite impressed with that.
Yeah.
Because I thought it was going to be like a bit pants, but.
I've not seen that.
And
no,
it's good.
I thought there was good bits to it, and that it held me anyway. Yeah, the end, you know. We just wonder if they're going to make like Slenderman 7, and it's all going to go downhill like The Purge. But
I don't know, because I watched that 30 Days a Night, the sort of horror film, and I thought
the original one,
the one with vampires.
Yeah,
yeah, and I thought that
for 7/11.
Yeah, and I thought that was a brilliant horror, like probably the best vampire film I've seen in a long time. But one of my mates said, don't watch the second one because it's going to spoil it for you, because it reveals how they come. Because I thought part of it was the ship just comes, the skies darken, and they're proper vampires. Do you know what I mean? They're like nasty, horrible.
Well, that's what happened in The Ring, though, isn't it? The original Ring was amazing. Then the next two explained away who she was and why she was there, which completely took away that ambiguity. And that ambiguity is that hole that you fill where the fear sits, you know. And if you explain away the fear, it's like turning all the lights on, for me, you know. Same with that. I think loads of sequels do that. They always go...
But wasn't the sequel to that American?
No, that was a remake.
Oh,
but they made three originals in Japan.
Oh, I did that. I
didn't
know. Okay, I saw the first one.
So, you've made some films. Mm. Your first one was it your first big film was Before Dawn?
Yeah.
and that was a zombie, but it's a different take on the zombie thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it wasn't per se zombies attacking everybody. It no. was quite a melancholy outset to it.
Well, it was the study of the disintegration of a relationship set against the disintegration of civilization, you know, and that's where it was. That's what we wanted to do with it. It was more important what happened between the two of them, really, and how they resolved that.
Yeah, I mean, there was one scene that caught my eye, and it was you when you jumped up on the sideboard. Yeah. And it was like, that was really good, because it was...
Yeah, it was, because it really happened.
And it was like...
You really hurt yourself.
I know that
he really
was,
hurt me.
I was going to say, that was an awesome, like, fight scene.
Yeah,
and you was proper nasty in it. No, like, disrespect, but
oh,
it was
no,
proper...
Oh, no, it was brilliant. Oh, it was such fun, wasn't it? We had such
it was
good
today.
Had, yeah, and it was obviously all set yeah. in this kitchen where we're talking now, and... We had a crash mat, which I need to explain was maybe a couple of inches.
Yeah.
Right?
Certainly
on a,
not
on
thick
a
enough.
York stone floor. Mm-hmm. So when I jump onto Dominic, and we choreographed it all, we had a fight director. And I jump onto him, he gets me, and he slams me down on the floor, right?
A wrestling body slam.
Yeah.
I noticed that.
Yeah. Well, normally you'd have a mattress probably about that thick, and the mattress was. About that thick.
Ouch.
And Dominic's quite a big chap and quite strong, and I'm quite small, and he just got me and he just went like that, boof, and I just went, oh, because I just completely got winded, and Dominic went, that's brilliant, everyone, that's fantastic, let's look at that back, and I'm on the floor.
No, sort of all crippled.
5 minutes, yeah, crumpled.
Where's Joe? Oh, don't worry about me. I'm...
Recast.
Did you enjoy doing the fight scenes with each other?
Yeah, yeah. They were really, really great.
Were they?
Yeah. I mean, it's a low-budget film.
Yeah.
There's no getting away with it. A low-budget British film. And we made it for very little, and then it was going to be released through Left Films, which is Helen Grace, who's released lots of stuff. And then Metrodome took it on, so it ended up going to Japan and Australia and Canada and New York and America and Germany, and it just did more than we ever expected at all, really, for this little film. So that's what I was saying to you earlier, I'd love to remake it. I wish we'd have made it properly. But to make it for our first thing was great. It was 2.5 weeks, everybody sleeping and filming in this house, and the whole crew and cast were just knocking
brilliant.
About together.
Yeah.
It was really, really, really good fun. Yeah, and we tried our best, and that was it. But they're re-releasing it on Blu-ray, aren't they? 101 Films are doing it. Yeah, in the second half, yeah, and they're re-releasing Bait, because they never got Blu-ray releases. Adult Babies got Blu-ray, and they never got Blu-ray, so yeah, they're re-releasing them on Blu-ray, which is great for us.
Mm. I like that film, Before Dawn. I sort of like the filming of it was, you know, spot on. So I don't think you should remake it.
I think you're just, as a director, you see it and you think, oh, I've done this differently. But I think you would look at any film you do and you're going to see things that you would do differently. But I think...
It's because it was handheld.
Yeah, on the Canons.
And
things,
yeah,
on
and
the
just
Canon.
Like, oh, I wish it... Like now you get it on a slider, you have it on a dolly. Or you on the
but we wouldn't have done it in 2 weeks for...
No, we wouldn't have.
You know,
no,
and
no.
We would probably
would have
had
it. I really love it, but, you know...
Yeah.
Just... I know, but it takes away that bit of realism to it when it's on the dolly and smoothness.
It did, because it had that sort of, it did.
Because it's got that bit of, especially when you're running up the moat.
Yeah, that sort of, when it's all shaky. Yeah.
And sort of you stop and you see the madman just like, rah,
yeah.
rah, 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 and then you turn around and run.
Yeah.
Because it gives it a bit of realism to the people who are watching it.
Mm.
And it, but like,
it's quite intense, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm. And your second film was Bait,
which
also, I've seen it being called the. Is it Taken?
Taking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How come it got two different names?
I don't know. Metrodome took it on again. Well, Metrodome paid for it. And I don't know. I've no idea. I think it was called Deleted at first, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was called
Deleted. The original script was Deleted.
And it was filmed under the Taking. They probably did some sort of research or something, but by the time it came out, it was called Bait.
And we didn't realise there was a shark film called Bait as well at the same time.
Well, I think they were going to call it The Bait, but I said I didn't want to spend my life explaining it's not called Debate, it's called The Bait. You know, so we said, well, all right then, well, we'll agree to it, but please just call it Bait. So we did. So that was. I don't really think about it now. I always think in my head it's called Bait, but for a long time, for a couple of years, I kept calling it The Taking because that's all it was. And it even came out with a title on as well. I think when it was first shown at the Leeds Town Hall, it was that.
It was, yeah. Yeah, I think.
Because I read a report, was it Scream? I think you did a interview for Scream, and they said something about some people think it's like not a horror film.
Yeah.
I think it is a horror film.
I think it is a horror film, but that's the whole thing, isn't it? People argue that Seven isn't a horror film. I mean, it was filmed just because the monster didn't have talons growing out of his ears or anything like that. And then, but the it was filmed as a horror film. You know, the lone shark is the monster. Mm. And so every shot, all the beats, the way it was constructed, the gore at the end, it's more gory than Before Dawn. Everything was geared towards the fact that that's a monster. But our argument was that, or the premise was that some of the monsters are living
next door
within us, you know, within our society, and also the argument that we said before about evil, that it's easy to, when somebody does something wrong in society, to say that they are evil. Well, to me, evil doesn't exist. It's what we create, and it's who certain people are and their intentions, and. And I think that was our point to argue that as well, that that there is no evil. It's just what man does to each other in the extreme circumstances.
I mean, it's as I said before, it's sort of reminding me of a film called Mr. In Between, which is not like a serial killer, but it had a very Shaney Meadows feel to it.
Yeah.
As well, and as I say, the kill scene at like the end was probably one of the best I've seen for, and it was very reminding me of the film Irreversible.
Yeah.
Because it was gory.
And like, it was a good set piece.
It was a really good set piece, yeah. Because really. I know friends of ours that have made horror films, and it comes to the gory bit at the end, which is what you're asking your audience to sit through a story that's an hour and a half long. All our films have a crescendo to them, where you're paying the audience for sitting there and watching your story. You know? So Before Dawn has the huge fight at the end where all the bloods and the things and everything that happens, everybody's been hacked up in the cellar. And the fight, and Bait has the big, they get him at the end, and same as Adult Babies, it all has to come to a crescendo. For me, you know, and for us, that's what we do, and try and hit the beats, and try not to let it dip over 5 or 10 minutes when you're trying to explain. I think you've got 20 minutes at the beginning to get your audience and telling the story, and then you've just got to get it going like a rocket, really. But so we gave ourselves 4 days at the end of the shoot to get that, and the bathroom was in a waterproof studio so that we could get the blood sloshing everywhere, and the water and the shower and the pipes that are broken, so water's going everywhere and that. So it was really, really good fun, that. But it was important to not just say, yeah, we'll just do that at the end.
And it was...
schedule it in properly.
And it was quite risky at one point, wasn't it? Because there was sinks involved. I mean, they weren't just prop sinks, were they? Oh, yes. And we had to have one take of when I get the sink, and I think the camera was...
Well, you ripped it off the wall, didn't you?
Yeah, and then I just bring it and I just throw it. But obviously the camera was in a certain position, obviously covered and protected, but it had to be in one take. And it was quite heavy, actually, as you can imagine. But it worked, wasn't it? It was great.
Yeah, I think it's a good effect.
Yeah, I think it was... we were lucky, actually, that we did get it in that one take. Otherwise, I don't know what we would have done.
Yeah.
It did.
And again, that was Alex Shandon, who's helped with the special effects on Adult Babies. He did the CGI animation, the bubble and Stercules, but he did the head smash, which was along with Darren Grasby. Mm-hmm. So it was makeup and prosthetics and green screen all together, sort of thing.
Was it?
Yeah, so that when he turns, it's prosthetics and there's pumps in his head, but there's a green patch on his head there hidden within the prosthetic that meant that when you turn, there's definitely, you know, there's, without a doubt, you can see through a certain part. There's a section of his head is missing, sort of thing. That can't, you know, and to me that's black magic. I just think it's real magic. You're like, how do you do that? You know, but they were very clever chaps.
It was good, and it had a lot of layers to that film. I think, I don't think it was just about two like girls, women wanting to start their own business. I think it was a bit more about freedom and a bit more of a humanity thing to it, because especially at the end scene,
friendship
friendship and how it goes, and family, and especially the end bit. What got to me was, where I think it was you comes just out your calf and you see the
lone shark.
Yeah.
Say sidekick, yeah.
Yeah, there. Then he looks at you and then it turns around and he's got kids as well.
Yeah.
That makes him human.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, he's just mercenary. That was the whole thing.
Yeah. Yeah. He's not, he's just doing a job.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like, what he's paid to do.
So maybe he's got a bit of release from the other guy.
Yeah.
Because the other guy obviously come across as nice.
Yeah.
And then the way he snapped.
Yeah.
Was pure evil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I saw Adult Babies last night.
Oh, did you?
I got finally around to watching it, and I thought it reminded me of Bad Taste.
Mm.
And I just thought, it was just a fun film.
Yeah.
You know.
It's very broad strokes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what we wanted. We didn't set it out to be anything else than that. And there is obviously a message underlying it, but the main point of the film is to have lots of fun.
Lots of fun, yeah. And I like the, well, not to give too much away, but I like sort of the beginning part where it all went a bit wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And that reminded me of a few scenes in Botched.
I haven't seen that.
And you know, if you ever get the chance to see it,
yeah.
It's like quite funny. I think it's got Stephen Hawking. Is it Stephen or Stephen Dwarf or Hawking? It's not him. It's the guy who played the kid from The Gate, I think.
Right.
Like the 1980s film, The Gate.
Yeah, we've got The Gate. Yeah, love The Gate.
So, but Wicked. Yeah, it was really good.
Oh, I'll have a look at that. Yeah,
watch there. That'll be on the list.
Yeah, it's got the Irish girl from The Commitments in.
All right, which
the short haired black one.
Oh, yeah. The dark haired.
Yeah.
Yes, I know.
When she plays a Russian with, not to give too much away, but with, anyway. But,
Oh, okay, we'll have to get that one.
But adult babies, who come up with the idea?
Well, we had the idea. I mean, I think, Dominic came up with the title, and from there, a story was created because it's such a great title. I mean, Attack of the Adult Babies, it was just brilliant. So we decided to, I decided to create a story around that and wanted to have to seemingly be this middle class normal, if there is such a thing, family, and then sort of set it in a backdrop of complete craziness, which was obviously the Broughton Hall where the
where that was
like a Masonic sort of big stately home. And so it starts off and you just it's almost like you're watching this some sort of drama going on, drama between a family, and then it all just turns on its head when the guys come in with the pistols and whatever, and then obviously the wife has to go off to retrieve this document, and then it all just goes completely wrong.
It went wrong from the onset when he came in and let go of his gun from his magazine, wasn't it? And then what bit I found funny was the girl flirting, the sort of mum flirting with the police woman.
When it
got the thing, I was trying to do it, and then she blows into the thing.
I think that was Kate Coogan's idea.
I think that was.
She was supposed to have the thing, and she said, "Oh, what if I'm doing this?"
Flirt. And exactly. You can see her son sort of cringing, going, "Oh, mum," you know. And I just thought some nice little touches.
Time Bandits, when that starts as a kind of Middle England little nothing going on, and then that spirals out of all control, and I quite like Adult Babies is that. It starts in a living room with a family playing a normal game, and it all goes wrong from there. And you know, very much so. Yeah, yeah. But that was a case in point. I mean, that was 12 weeks from start to finish as well, because I'd had a job in America set up, and it 2 weeks before I was supposed to start it, it collapsed. And so we didn't know what else to do. And then a producer friend and then a producer friend said, "Well, why don't you make Attack of the Adult Babies?" And we sat there waiting to be made. So we ran at it and made it.
Mm.
Did you get any criticism for it? Like a bit like...
It's weird because Bait and Before Dawn, even though Before Dawn is like this tiny little film, it seemed to get all these eight and nine stars. Yeah. And we were like, "Oh my word." You know, so it was really, really pleasing that people got it. But then Adult Babies is definitely split. It's definitely split. If people think it's fantastic or people just go, "I can't watch this." But I guarantee it's not boring. There's not one dip in it. It's
definitely
from beginning to end for an hour and a half. It is a riveting watch. And I think there are flashes of originality in there that you wouldn't see anywhere else. And it's a roller coaster, but it's certainly not some people's cup of tea. You'd have to be a genre.
And actually, a lot of people just look at the title and go, "I'm not watching that." And Men in Nappy, "I'm not watching that." But I think it is what it is. It is, you know, if anyone gets offended, well, then, you know, it's pretty obvious what kind of...
You don't watch it. Or if you do, you turn it off.
Yeah.
I like sort of the secret society part.
Mm.
The same with Hostel. I'm not so much into the gore part of Hostel. I sort of like the secret society part where there's like a club, like a coven of people, and that's what I found good about Adult Babies.
Yeah,
a lot of people have said that actually with society, haven't they?
Somebody said society. Yeah, film society. Yeah, it's been compared to
and bad taste.
And obviously the end, sort of it gets a bit crazy during the end where he ties his guts in.
Yeah,
but it's just bad taste. It was good. It's like a brilliant watch.
Yeah.
So,
oh, that's nice of you. Thank you. That's the crescendo that you're paying the audience for. You know, there's got to be explosions everywhere. And telling the story between, we recut a 1930s cartoon that we bought the rights to, and then we had CGI animation, and then Lee Hardcastle doing the stop motion animation, claymation, and then cutting to the big green screen monster in the cell that was 35.
When that come up, I thought, what the going on about, and it's like something completely crazy, and he comes out, doesn't he? I won't give it to him. I don't, you know, I'll probably give it away now, but
but it is great when you when you're with an audience and you're watching people's reactions and stuff, because it does get a reaction from the audience, and I think that's job done then, isn't it, really? Because I think especially when it's at a Leeds Film Festival, an international film festival, I mean, it couldn't have got a better reception. It was just
Leeds was just ridiculous. It was on at 9 o'clock at night, half the audience were legless, and people were just screaming and shouting at the screen. It was like
brilliant.
A massive party. It was the best thing ever.
Yeah.
But you took it to Paris, didn't you? And you said the same thing. You were all at the Q&A went on for like an hour.
I couldn't believe it, because it had subtitles, because it was a La Tronche festival in Paris, and it, obviously the film was in subtitles, and even the festival director didn't really speak English. So I had a translator on stage with me beforehand.
Yeah.
And so we were just chatting. I talked about the film, and I thought, well, I'll watch it, because it's always quite icky, isn't it, when you watch a film and you don't know what the audience are going to be like, and you just think, oh. So I thought, I'll watch half an hour of it. And they got it straight away. And and I thought it would be lost in translation, some of the stuff, because it's obviously in subtitles, but not at all. But I think the French are really into there. And actually, because we poke fun at the English so much in it, I'm sure they really enjoyed that. But they completely got it. Yeah, it was great.
What's it like playing a bit of a psycho in that? Because, like, you didn't... Again, another good kill scene with two knitting needles.
Brilliant. God, that was a hard scene to do, wasn't it? That took so many takes. It was so difficult to get that angle right. Clinton, just a dream to play. It was just so much fun, because obviously you've got to root her in reality. So she had her little backstory that she's obviously, you know, she's institutionalized and all those kind of things.
Yeah.
So I wanted her to have that, you know, she obviously hasn't had time to get to a dentist because her teeth are all black. And I love that whole building a character. And she's only the sidekick, really, to Margaret, who's played by Sally Dexter, who's
incredible. I like that ambiguity, though, is she the daughter? Is she the girlfriend?
Oh, yeah,
What is she? What is she to them?
Because she's kind of in love with her, because she's like a mother figure, you know, but there's also something else going on. So I think it's up to the audience, really, to sort of decide that. But.
Yeah, Clinton came across as the one who sort of liked the violence of it all. Like, was the machine
she just did what basically Margaret wanted her to do, and I think she was slightly in love with Margaret, and she could never get out of there. That's her reality now, so you know, she's just doing a job, I suppose.
Brilliant film. So going back to the zombies, you and, like, obviously you both like sort of the zombies, what do you think to the modern day zombies, like, that can run fast? I mean, I know you had Before Dawn, the guy was like
Very fast.
But films like Brad Pitt's been in World War Z, whatever you want to call it, and like they're more, and like 28 Days Later, they're more in sort of fiction out there. That's more an infection.
Well, we never mentioned zombies in Before Dawn specifically, but I mean, I did run the Leeds Zombie Film Festival for 8 years as well, so I'm a zombie obsessive.
Yeah.
But I remember showing it, I can't remember where we showed it, and somebody stood up and said, I don't like running zombies, they're ridiculous, they're not real zombies. And our answer to that was, well, zombies aren't real, so zombies can be whatever they want to be. It doesn't really matter what some... Because I think, George Romero said zombies would never run, their ankles would break. And he's kind of got a point, because they're atrophied, aren't they? The blood isn't pumping around the body, but... I don't know.
But if it's an infection, it could be, you know, that the blood really is, because they're sort of hyped or, I don't know, they're not real, are they? Yeah. So,
but Frankenstein never scared me. You know, the running zombies scare me. Really scary. So that's what we wanted. I didn't want anybody lumbering around, but I like them both. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, like, could it be the same thing? Because, like, Before Dawn, there's a bit while you're laid in bed, you're, like, nearer, and then you'd sort of, you can see the life drain, and then you're... bang like that, and you're awake with the big eyes.
Big red eyes,
So is it just killing the body, then it reanimates itself?
Yeah, it's supposed to be the contagion takes over then.
Yeah.
So the body or the brain dies, and therefore you don't need the lungs, and then the contagion takes over.
We did a bit of research as well with rabies, We did watch a couple of, which are pretty awful, just for movement and stuff like that, you know, to get the movement of.
I decided not to watch that. I don't like that stuff.
I watched it, but because of the movement of some, and I like the fact that there was water there, but it's only a tiny little thing in the film, that there's a glass of water there, but I can't drink the water because it's that
hydrophobia.
Hydrophobia, that's what it's called. Yeah,
oh, right.
So it was kind of, you know, you probably wouldn't pick up on it, but it was, that was my take on it. It was almost like that. And we watched the video, you know, just to see how they moved and stuff. For myself. And was he called, it was Alex, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Who played Bardacchi. Alex Bardacchi, who played.
And we had a movement. Dave Nolan, so who looked into all that.
We had it, and he was showing us stuff, and we were in the studio, and we looked at how they moved and.
Well, it's funny you should
twitches and stuff.
Funny you should say that about movement, because like scientists, I read an article saying that scientists reckon they know why people are scared of spiders, and it's like the way they move. Mm. It's like don't come natural to us.
Yeah.
And then I thought about it, and I thought, well, the Japanese sort of. First found it in the Japanese films where like they're all disjointed walking like that, and like they film things backwards.
Yeah.
So they record it forwards, then play it backwards. Mm. So you've maybe got a point where studying the like movement on natural things.
Yeah. And not being able to, you know, I found it very, well, it is incredibly upsetting when you see something like that happen, you know, and when someone has actually got rabies. But it was just research really to see how to move and not make it look ridiculous.
That was born because the choreographer was, we were talking to him about it and talking about pathogens and pandemics, and he was and we said that because there's some extras at the end, what would really really ruin it would be if the extras were just crawling in and doing this, that and the other, and it's a low budget, and even though we hired some extras, we had to give them that movement class because it can ruin it if you just get one bad extra looking awful. You can just wreck, you can pop the whole bubble. So that was it. There had to be a thought behind the movement and why they moved and then at what pace they moved and their focus and where they were going and why they clicked into that.
Mm.
And it all worked out that. I was really, because even at the end when the extras come in and they're bombing it around the house around him, you don't doubt it for a second they're part of that universe. And
it just gives the actor or the extra or the person something, a reality, doesn't
it? Yeah.
And the end of the film was quite emotional, really, when you, and obviously, spoiler alert, when sort of you woke up and you were both, because you sort of recognised each other, but you were screaming.
Yeah.
Which is what we kind of had to do.
Yeah.
We needed to do that a long time ago. But I think it's a meeting.
It's how they finally find their way together again.
Yeah.
Because that's what we said, when you were like Before Dawn too, and it was like, well, what would they do? You know, you can't cut to them living nicely in the middle of the forest making tea zombies together. It'd be preposterous, you know. So, but the fact is, you know, they meet, they're there, you know, and their eyes lock, and then there is...
Become one again.
Yes. Yeah.
And like, I like it. It's not explained where it comes from.
No.
What's done, and there's no afterthought to it. It's just.
That's it.
Well, that's what we said about earlier. It's just turning the lights on. You know, it's just you can pop. I keep saying popping bubbles, but you can. It definitely demystifies it if you take it all away again. Because isn't it? People always miss on at Night of the Living Dead that he explains it. He said there's a satellite that's been round. Venus or Uranus, and it's come back round, and but it's as it's coming past the atmosphere, it's sprinkling radioactive dust that's turning everybody into, it's bringing the dead back alive. And he just explains it very quickly, but you know, because I know loads of people said, well, nobody, Romero's never explained where the zombies come from. He specifically explained where it's come from. It's a satellite that's been around the planet, and it's sprinkling the radioactive stuff around here. But,
what do you think to Return of the Living Dead?
I really love it. I love it. I really, really love it. Yeah, we've shown that as well. Because zombie films can be zombie films.
Yeah.
I think like with vampire films, like Near Dark is one of the best vampire films ever, but I just don't like the gossamery stuff. But you can do anything with zombie films. Pontypool's another one, you know. And the fact that they're infected through words and all that.
When he's in the radio station.
Yeah. Incredible. You know, it's left wide open, isn't it? So that's why I didn't like it when you're being told not to make your zombies run in that, because...
And Dead Set as well, that was
Dead
good,
Set
wasn't it?
Was fantastic.
Yeah. Dead Set was good.
Yeah.
That was excellent.
Yeah.
That, that came in parts, but I think I bought it, so it was one film.
Yeah.
But I think that's on Netflix now. They've even got that.
Is it?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it for a while, though. It's fantastic, yeah.
So have you got anything new in the pipelines coming up that
We've always got something on the go. So Joe made Sybil this year.
I saw that on your website, yeah.
Going around, yeah. And that's doing the festivals. And then we're trying to get the funds together for another one. And then we got the rights to Lost Dogs by Jeff Lemire, but that's going to be a couple of years. So that's an adaptation of a comic book. But that's going to take a while, that, because that's a bigger
budget.
So what film has stuck with you since sort of you started to get into horror? For you, it was The Exorcist.
Definitely The Exorcist.
For me, it's
The
Exorcist. But I've got like maybe two scenes or three scenes that scare me to death and will always stick with me. The first is from Salem's Lot, where he comes tapping on the window.
Without a doubt, classic.
The second's The Fog with a knock.
Yeah. I bet you haven't seen The Fog, have you? It's a good
I don't think
watch,
I have
actually.
Seen it. I think I read the book. Yeah. I've read the book a long time ago. But yeah. And that's terrifying.
I think it's just been re-released, hasn't it? The 4K thing, was it not?
I'm not sure.
It's... They Live and Escape from New York. I'm sure The Fog's come out. As
I'd
well.
Like to see that.
Yeah,
actually.
I'll try and get hold of that.
We should have an afternoon, a Stephen King afternoon.
Yeah, sure.
I sort of think this new 4K and these new like HD films sort of ruin them, because it just looks like a
Some
cheap.
Some of them it does.
Yeah, because it like makes them look like a cheap 90s American sitcom. Do you know what I mean?
I think as long as it depends if you sell it, because I've been to people's houses and the tellys aren't set up right. If you get your telly to that you know, where it reads between the frames and that, you've got to set it up so it reads a certain 24 frames per second, because it's crystal clear. The only thing that spoils it for me is I watched the Blu-ray of Shogun Assassin, which is one of my favourite films, and you can see all the glue on the beards and that, you know, and you think, ah, oh, come on.
Yeah, you can see a lot more hair on them things.
Yeah, you can.
So, like, was there a scene that sticks out for you? Oh, no, I was going to tell you my third scene. The third scene that scares me is from The Exorcist 3. And then, like, you're seeing it.
Yeah.
And it's the one where it's just a shot of the corridor, then you see the nurse with a chink, chink, and that's all it is.
Yeah.
And everyone I speak to say the scariest scene in The Exorcist 3, I won't tell you, to says the, like, sort of nurse down the corridor. Like, sort of, that's it.
Nurses down corridors.
It was a nice little treat when The Exorcist 3 coming out, because it actually wasn't the disaster that Exorcist 2 was.
The Heretic.
Yeah.
And yeah.
No, I've not seen Exorcist 3.
It's great. The Exorcist 3 is great. I thought you were going to say Exorcist 2.
No.
Yeah. No, skip the second, because the third one is more or less the second one. It brings it back.
That's right.
Okay.
It's got the two walk off at the end of The Exorcist. It's got them two, because they still meet for coffee, don't they?
Yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah.
That's a good.
Well worth the watch.
Definitely. So, Exorcist, I've got three scenes. Is like, there any scenes for you guys?
I liked...
That stick with you, that still scare you or think...
I couldn't really watch it. Do you know Beyond the Grave? It was the old...
No, I haven't seen that one, I don't
it's,
think.
It's the old Amicus film. And it's what they called? It's an anthology film with Peter Cushing that owns an old... second-hand shop, and it's people that either steal things or try and rip him off, and it's the curses that are in the objects that people buy. So they buy a door or they buy a mirror, and there's one where he looks in, there's a scene where he looks in the mirror and the person, the spirit that's within the mirror, kind of comes floating towards it. And I must have been really young, actually, because I was living in Worley, so I might have even been at primary school. I can't believe I was that young. I must have been at primary school. Yeah, I must have been. And for some reason we were allowed to stay up late, and I remember watching that thinking, oh my God, I couldn't watch it, you know, it was absolutely terrifying. And that's brilliant. And I love that film anyway. I like anthology stuff, but I really like that. I like the, well, I wouldn't say I like it, it terrified me. But I also in The Omen with the, you know, the nanny on the thing. I just thought, oh my God, she's going to do it. She's not going to do it.
This is for you, Damien. This is for
you.
That's a brilliant film.
Yeah, I was going to mention
really
that.
Really
well.
Good, The Omen.
Yeah.
Where sort of, a jackal. Oh. It's like the jackal gives birth, don't they? They go find it.
That's right, yeah. You just dig up the grave and the jackal's there.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And then, because I had to do that 365 days, I had to watch all of them.
Yeah.
And I think one of the best series I came across, not the best film, but the best series, was the Phantasm films.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of really thought that, you know, the boy, the big guy and that.
Yeah.
I thought that was really good. And the scariest horror guy I've seen so far... is the Harvey Kane, Reverend Kane from Poltergeist 2.
Poltergeist, yeah.
Well, I was going to mention Poltergeist in Amityville, because it was, I remember the scene of, it's just such a simple scene with a little girl sitting in front of the television, and it's, you know, the blur.
Yeah.
And because I was obviously really young when I watched that, and that sort of stuck with me. And it was at one of the Hammer Horrors, The House That Bled to Death. Is that the Hammer?
Yeah.
Do you remember that? Yeah. And as a little girl, because you stick the VH, I remember it recording it, not supposed to be recording it on the VHS, and watching it, and there's that sound of it going in of the particular VHS, and then I'd watch the, you know, the Hammer House, and it terrified me because you know, but it's all those, it's just images, isn't it? Yeah. But it's also, I think it's a lot to do with where you are in your life as well, how old you are, or what you're going through, and I think with Poltergeist, I got really scared just because I completely believed that there were. It was possible.
But again, it comes back to what Dom said about it being a normal family.
Yeah,
and it
absolutely.
Basically can happen to anyone.
Yeah.
In the house and, you know, all that in Amityville as well. The house in Amityville, you know, it's just because we all live in a house, don't we?
Yeah.
And they're all little dark corners somewhere and you can hear... Yes, absolutely. Sorry, yeah. But, you know, in any environment, if you're in a flat or in a bedsit or anything, I lived in Shepherdess Walk in this kind of bedsit when I was... left drama school, and they used to hold seances there. Michael Benting used to hold seances, and so they're literally it was a really strange, it was converted on pub, but they were, he'd converted it into little sort of mezzanine flats. Mm. But there was no like central heating, was there? No. Or anything like
that. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of
mirrors everywhere.
Oh, all sorts of
wall. It was just, it was bonkers. It was like, it was, but I didn't have any cash, and I was just living there. And it was full of character, but I just remember being terrified the whole time. And then an orgon accumulator.
That's what they were trying to build.
Yes.
Something called an orgon accumulator, which is lots and lots and lots of mirrors in the room, all facing each other. And
but I had to move from one sort of bedsit place to another one. And my friend, who was the stepdaughter of the guy who was kind of the landlord, there's only a few of us in there because he'd only have it, you know, rent it out to people that he knew. And she said, oh, that's where they held all the seances. I was like, oh, my God. It was just like, it was half the size of this, but it was covered in mirrors, wasn't it?
I don't think I'd like that.
It was so scary. I never really probably slept there. It was freezing as well, because there was no heat.
There's mice.
There's mice everywhere.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Because your like bedroom's on like a little raised, like,
yeah.
This cobbled together mezzanine thing on stilts.
Yeah.
But you could lie on the bed and look down onto the floor and see these mice scuttling around at night. You know, it's bizarre, isn't it?
Speaking of mirrors, did you ever watch a film called Watcher in the Woods?
No.
I think it was a Disney film, but that was... if you ever get the chance, watch it, because that's about a girl who does something, as far as I can remember, but she gets trapped in a mirror. Mm. And, like, one girl sees her, but the girl who's trapped in the mirror's got, like, a blindfold on, a white blindfold, as far as I can remember. And it's scary. It's a scary film.
So is she looking out from the mirror all the time? Or is...
I don't know, really. Oh. But it's called Watcher in the Woods. But I just remember that scene, and that pit me against mirrors.
All right.
I don't like mirrors.
You wouldn't have survived.
I don't want someone else looking back at me.
There must be a phobia called something, a phobia.
Well, you could fear of mirrors. Behind you, don't you? And you can, because sometimes you see people... If you, you know, in films, and they look in the mirror and they can see something behind them, they look behind them and then there's nothing there.
The classic jump scare,
I would die if I was driving on a road at dark and I looked in my mirror and there was someone sat in the back. I would die.
On a country road.
Yeah, it'd be horrible.
I've always been cynical about that. I don't believe in ghosts, I don't believe in the devil, I don't believe in spirits. I just don't believe it, you know, so I've never ever been scared of the dark or things like that, you know. I've been, whereas you used to struggle sleeping all the way through even drama school. You'd say, I led there thinking, convinced myself that somebody was making their way down the corridor. They'd managed to get in the door, they'd shut the door behind them, and they were on there, and now they're
head,
and you'd added it all together that it was there, or ghosts or things like that. And somebody said they were more scared of ghosts than they were of burglars, and you think,
I don't know.
I don't know why I've grown up so cynical. Probably too many horror films, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, I just don't. Even Ouija boards or anything like that. And even people say, no, I went to see a psychic and they said this and this. And you think, well, where's the tape? Let me listen to the tape, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's just feelings, isn't it? I think a lot of the time.
I think some psychics are just good at cold reading and like sort of reading people.
Yeah.
Things like that. You've got a tattoo of Frankenstein on your arm?
No.
Is it not Frankenstein?
No, it's not. It's a rubbish one I had done years ago, maybe 30-odd years ago.
I thought
ago.
You had
that's
a
ridiculous.
Frankenstein tattoo.
No.
Oh, right.
No, I haven't, no.
Oh, that's strange. There you go. You see, that's how my mind... I swear I saw it on him. Anyway, but you said you like Frankenstein.
No, I don't. It doesn't frighten me, Frankenstein. No. I like all the old ones.
Yeah.
I love all the old classics.
Like sort of Hammer horrors.
Just, yeah, but I'm sure I could have watched Frankenstein at 10 years old, or The Mummy and things like that, and just gone, yeah. It was just comparing the running ones to the lumbering ones.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I could get up the stairs and out the window and back down again and make a cup of tea and be out of the house before
Frankenstein comes.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to try it though.
No, no, no. That big thing coming from it now.
So how do you see horror in like general going now from like you've got, you know, everything coming out, it's sort of the cinema. Do you think it's going to go back to the 80s? Because like there's quite a lot of films coming, like sort of like The Babysitter on like sort of Netflix, that's going back to sort of a B-movie, 80s.
Well, I hope not too far, because I think so. There's a few years ago, Fright Fest, and every other film had the 80s arpeggio music over the top of it, and you just get a bit fed up with it. You know, there's no forward movement, and it's like another year, there's lens flares across everything, you know, but there's always something that absolutely sweeps you off your feet. I think, even at Fright Fest, I don't mind watching one good, one bad, one good, one bad, or one that I don't like personally. And then, but there's always, I think that always within the genre, it never seemingly ever seems to get tired. There's always something every year that comes out that you go, brilliant, you know. And whether that is thriller or horror or gore fest.
I mean, I don't think I've met anyone besides yourselves, maybe one other person that likes The Babadook. Speaking of
I think people that I know that actually, like horror films said, oh no, I didn't really get it, I just thought it was this, that and the other. But I think it was really clever.
I think it was partly because of the kid.
Maybe.
I think it's a very real situation, and I think I could relate to it as a mum, and she's obviously sleep deprived, she's got a difficult child.
Yeah.
And when you're sleep deprived, things can really go crazy in your head, as anyone who doesn't sleep can vouch for.
Yeah, and I think relate.
Yeah, I mean, I could, because children. I had a difficult son as well, and I think
well, he was something awful happened to him.
No, he's still around. It's fine. But I think I just thought it really got to me. It got under my skin, and I think it, with the fairy tale element to it, and what was real and what wasn't real, and the little and I think in a lot of horror films when there is children in it, I think it is scarier when there's children in it anyway, because of their imaginations and what was real and what wasn't. And she was, you know, I think she was obviously off kilter anyway because of what she'd been through and her grief and her mourning and her sleep deprivation, and then she had this really difficult kid. And I just thought, and then they threw in this fairy tale, the Babadook, into it, this book, and I thought it was really good. I wasn't expecting anything from it, and I just...
And it's allegorical, wasn't it, as well?
Yeah,
I really love allegorical.
And, you know, how she was the outsider, and the kid was the outsider in society, you know, all those things. I just thought, because it's Jennifer Kent, I think, who's the director, it's a female director, and I was blown away by it. I really was. It really took me on a journey, and it was an emotional journey as well as quite fearful as well. So for me,
yeah.
That's the fridge.
Oh, is it? The fridge is
buzzing.
Sorry, it's making ice.
So because that book just appeared, didn't it, in the bookshelf? Now, her former job was a children's book writer in the film, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So do you think she wrote the book and put it there?
Yeah.
And
but without knowing,
yeah,
or
without knowing, like
that out, or
yeah,
I do.
It had that creepiness to it because it just kept arriving, didn't it? And I think there you go. You know, it doesn't have to necessarily make that much sense, but I think because it's horror, you can.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good analogy at the end where, like, they say we've all got bad feelings, but we've just got to feed them. So, like, release, and then that at the end, obviously, go and feed it worms.
Yeah.
So.
Like, yeah, somebody said, mentioned something like that. I can't quite remember it, because it's all an allegory for what's going on. But somebody said, oh, you've got to look at her fingernails at the end of it, whether she's imagined it and whether there's dirt under her fingernails or something like that. I was like, oh, I should go back and watch that. But I have to, yeah, I can't remember what it was exactly that they were saying about the end of that, but I'll have to re-look at it. Mm. Something's about fingernails that tell the tale or something.
Oh, right. Sure.
I didn't think that.
Maybe I made it up. Maybe I dreamt it.
I must have look at her fingers.
I mean, there was a good scene again, and I've got a thing about voices on phones, and like she gets a phone call, doesn't she, and it's like no, please don't do that.
Yeah,
I like the Bavarian Sound Studio as well. In the last few years, I thought that was fantastic. Oh, that's probably about 7 years old now, isn't it,
because that came out when Before Dawn was
that was the same year. Yeah,
that's
right. Yeah, did you watch the film with Arnold Schwarzenegger in, where like Maggie it was called, with his...
No, I didn't. No. Only because somebody told me it was awful, so I didn't. But I will get around to it.
Yeah,
what's it called?
It's called Maggie.
Oh.
And that's like a zombie thing, and it sort of thought, it's got not like sort of reminiscence, but you're trying to look after you in the film,
yeah.
and he's trying to look after his daughter where she's got bit.
Yeah.
And it's like, you've either got two ways of doing it, either kill her or put up with it sort of thing and wait till she turns then kill her.
Mm.
So that's more of an emotional breakthrough. But
okay.
yours was 2013?
Before we filmed it in 2011, we filmed it.
Right, and that theirs was 2015.
Yeah. So they stole it off us.
They stole it. That's one thing I was going to say. And as I say, from you, like The Exorcist, there's a film called Ouija Origins of Evil.
Oh, I don't know that one.
That's also on Netflix, and that's like a homage sort of thing to The Exorcist in a funny sort of way, where sort of she befriends the vicar. She sort of got a bit of a soft spot for him. So there's that element in there.
And that's on Netflix, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, I
yeah.
can watch that one.
Did you nearly run out of films on the 365?
Well, because some people didn't agree with this, but because I didn't have time, I cheated and I just watched short horror films online.
Ah.
You see, and there was one about a werewolf. It's called Luna. If you ever get the chance, type it into Netflix. It's called Luna, and it's about a werewolf. That's really good.
You said that's a short?
Yeah, it's about 20 minutes, 15 minutes long.
And that's on Netflix?
No, sorry. Did I say Netflix?
Yeah, I thought you did. But
I probably did. I meant YouTube.
YouTube, yeah.
So, some really good stuff out there on like YouTube, just like students making it. It's a lot more...
Oh, the short... Well, we're a fan of short
films
anyway.
Short
films, really
I
great.
Think.
And,
They're not governed by studios or like producers or budgets or things like that. So like they're sort of open to, within reason with the sort of standards of YouTube to do what they want to do.
Yeah.
Yes, and it's a platform, isn't it? And I suppose I think the Shudder do short films.
I've not looked into Shudder. One of my mates said it's not very good, and he was going to.
Oh, I quite like it. It's got loads of classics on there and new stuff. And
is it?
Yeah. I think it's quite good. Yeah, it's getting better as well.
Is it?
Yeah. We've had it for a couple of years. No, more than that. And I think it's great. Mate, you know, and there is shorts on there. There's the old ones, and there's some obscure stuff. There's some new stuff. And
yeah, that's cool.
They do mix it up. Yeah,
you've got some stop motion in your films, like sort of claymation. You're both fans of that, then?
Yeah, well, I love animation anyway, and but we're friends of Lee Hardcastle, and I shared an office with him as well in Leeds for a while, and his friend, and so we've always gotten involved with Bait and then Adult Babies and. But he's really ridiculously busy now. It was kind of a hobby for him. Then he got millions of followers, subscribers on his YouTube channel, and he's working for Adult Swim now, and he's doing all sorts of stuff.
Is he?
Rick and Morty stuff he does. And
Rick and Morty, cool.
Yeah, he's doing all sorts. I mean, he's fantastic, and he's obsessive about it. He keeps getting better and better and better. I think he's making a feature anthology at the moment, which you've just done some voice work for.
Yeah,
well.
What was it called? Curtains. Yeah, we showed it at the beginning of Tackle the Adult Babies in Leeds.
Right.
Oh, and in Fright Fest, I think.
He's an evil genius. He's fantastic.
That's good fun.
The stuff he did for you, especially at the end of Bait, again was good.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Again, just... you played another where they just ripped the garden thing off. And
I don't know where it is.
I was just going to say it was up there for a while, the little model.
Yeah, he gave us the models.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh,
so my
cool.
friend Vicky has got her model in America, and I thought mine
was
up there.
The boys have nicked.
But maybe we took it. I don't know. It is made out of plasticine, so it's only got a shelf life of.
All right, I've got no wiring in it.
There is wiring in it.
Yeah,
things are starting
to
fall apart, aren't they? A little bit.
Because the model that we had for the green screen at the end of Adult Babies was 35 foot tall.
Yeah.
When he did then he followed it up with his claymation.
Yeah,
it's just it was a puppet. So then he had to cut it to pieces and rewire it and put a wiring thing inside, so that then he could animate that for the claymation section there. So by the time he finished with it, there's nothing left. He had a couple of arms left, and that was it.
I know, it was such a brilliant model.
And I thought we were going to keep it forever because it cost a fortune as well. Sean Harrison made that,
right?
Who works on everything you can think of. Unfortunately, there was nothing left of it. There was an arm. He framed an arm that was left and gave it to us for Christmas present last year.
That's wicked. What do you both think of? Because like one of my favourite films is The Exorcist, and I really like Cannibal Holocaust. Mm-hmm. What sorts of your views on the?
I'm not into Cannibal Holocaust. I don't like. Oh, don't.
Is it
Martyrs?
I love Martyrs. I really like Martyrs, but it was hard.
There's a scene in there that I struggled to watch, and it was the one where he just slaps her.
Yeah,
she's
too long.
Yeah,
get the message. Yeah, Yeah, it's just...
But then in Irreversible, that there's a scene in that which went on quite a long time.
Oh, is that in the... Yeah.
In the subway.
Yeah, then, subway.
A friend of ours who teaches film and media in Cardiff at the university there, and she really, she said Martyrs is a feminist statement, and I was like, I never thought to feel like that at all, you know, so... Yeah. But yeah, you know, because there's ways you could start slapping, and then you could shoot from the other side of the door, couldn't you? And you know what's going on with the sounds, but you went on and on and on. It did, didn't it? Really brutal, wasn't it?
Sort of Cannibal Holocaust has got a bad rep because it used live animal scenes.
That's, and I hate it.
It used
animal abuse.
The same as Cannibal Ferox did. Mm. I mean, they have brought it out, but they've had to cut quite a lot of it out.
Yeah.
And you've got all the...
It's just not entertainment to me, that, is it?
No.
So that's why I don't like a Hostel. You think, I know someone's been... You know, I know you're showing off your special effects and this is that, but someone's been tortured and they're screaming away, and then you've kept it on the screen because you're going, look at the special effect. But it's like the inside of a 15-year-old's mind.
Eli Roth, he's like into all that, isn't he? He's into all the gore, Eli Roth.
But I like gore, yeah. But I just don't like spiteful gore. You know, our films are ridiculously gory.
Yeah.
There's not a spite to them. You know, and if there is, there's a moral.
There's
to
a reason
them,
why.
There's a, yeah, there's, a, yeah, there's no rhyme or reason in that, you know, one.
Yeah,
there.
But just to show off that, it's just like, oh, come on.
What did have them? You seen Serbian film yet? Them,
no, I don't want to watch it. No. It's just so far away from why I watch films and horror
that was quite hardcore as well.
Yeah, there was a scene in that you kind of go, it was really, really well.
It was really well done. Yeah,
well made, but there's a scene that you just go, I know, I can imagine, please.
Serbian films, well, like, sort of made, but again, from the content, it's bad. But one of the worst films I've seen is an only 20 minute short, and it's called Aftermath. Mm-hmm. And like, that's brutal. I just didn't like it. I just didn't like the way it was. Again, it's a foreign film. I think it's a Swedish or Switzerland acolyte, so it could be wrong.
Yeah.
But going on about Martyrs, I find the French are really good at horror films.
Yes.
Yeah, they did Inside as well.
I was just about to mention...
Switchblade Romance,
yeah. Was it? Yeah.
Yeah, and they're very, very good at building an atmosphere.
But
Sophie Dahl apparently did that for very little money, didn't she? She liked the script and did it.
But no one, because we watched Inside of me and my group of friends, and sort of none of them liked it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I suppose there is a brutality to it, but I thought the atmosphere, the way it sent it, and that ending was electric, because all you wanted to hear was a noise at the end of it, and you didn't. It was like, whoa.
Yeah, and
really powerful.
Martyrs, was it like one of the opening scenes where she just like bursts in, or is it where the bursts in and sort of shoot all the family and that? That's
the beginning,
or is it halfway through?
But there's an intelligence behind them films, and the French are very good at that, and the moral and the allegory and the metaphors that are involved are there. But there isn't that sort of thing going on in the same way with Eli Roth.
No. I mean, he's done a homage to Cannibal Holocaust called Green Inferno.
Yeah, that's right.
I saw that.
What did you think to it?
Oh no, hang on. Is that the one set on the island?
No, you have seen that. You have seen.
Is it the one when they turn into there's a cannibalistic island? Is that the one?
It's the one where they try and save the trees.
Yeah, it's a film. They take a camera with them and
I'm sure you've
seen it. I'm sure you saw it. And you
I'm thinking of something else. I'm thinking of something else. I don't know. Is it the Green Inferno? Oh, I can't remember. I've seen that many. Oh,
but there you go.
I'll get that done.
Just going on to Emmerdale, because you had, it's mm-hmm. like Emmerdale going okay for you?
Yeah, I love Emmerdale. It's my passion, and I'll stay there as long as they'll have me. I absolutely love it.
Were you one of the longest running?
No, I think somebody put something up the other day about the list of who'd been there. I think I'm like 10th or something like that. Chris Chattel, who lives in the same village, has been there for 30 years or something. Yeah. But there's loads more than me there, yeah. But I have been there a while, 22 years, something like that.
How did you first come in? I can't...
Oh,
I can't.
Same thing, just going for auditions. And I just got the audition, you know. I've been to tons of auditions. Some of them got, some of them didn't. You know, some you just want to die because you didn't get, you know, and you're sitting there rocking around the city wondering if you've got it. And then that one I did manage to get, you know, it's just the other one. That
That's
I got. It was
brilliant.
Only for 8 episodes.
But you're in there for 22 years.
I think they just forgot to write me out. And I've dodged some bullets in my time. But I love it. I absolutely love it. It still frightens me to death. It still takes up all my brain space. And I absolutely love it, yeah. They're well behind making all the horror films as well. They're really supportive, yeah.
Because you do it with, is it Mark I can't pronounce
Charnock.
He's a big horror fan as well, isn't
he? He is, yeah. Well, we ran the Leeds Zombie Film Festival for 8 years as well together, yeah.
But you was also a character in Inbred.
Yeah, that was Alex Shandon. That's how I came across Alex Shandon. Yeah, I was a fan of his films anyway. Yeah.
That song stuck in my ears. That guy with...
Evi Gubb.
Yeah, Evi.
Seamus.
Yeah, Seamus. Yeah,
and it sort of took me halfway through. I don't think I even watched that. I didn't think it was you.
Yeah.
Because...
He's very good, isn't he?
Because you played quite a scary character.
Yeah, but even then it was like comic book horror.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Singing and dancing and that, but...
It's sinister, though, isn't it?
I don't... Yeah, there's a bit... As far as I can remember, because I did watch it a long time ago, was the bit where you're getting into a circle, you're all getting into a circle, and then you release that horse.
Oh, it's horrible, that. And he's
laid down, and the horse goes bang, and he smashes him apart. Yeah.
Well, I didn't think that was spiteful at all. I think it's definitely... No, but there's a comic book sensibility to it, isn't there? You know, there's no...
Definitely.
It's not spiteful. It's silly.
Gruesome way to die.
Yeah,
of course, yeah. But, you know, we're all made of butter, and we're a big bag of blood, and if you prick us, we start bleeding. You know? But there was no torturous awfulness in there. It was really well over the top, and clearly fantasy as well, you know. So that's why they let me do it.
Have you starred in any other more horror films like Inbred that's not done by yourself?
I do get offered maybe two or three times a year, fortunately. But if it's not clearly fantasy, because ITV and the production company read them, and then they'll say yes or no whether I can do it or not. So if there's something in there that I'll be tied with, then they just say no, and there's usually something within the script that could bring me or Emmerdale or ITV into disrepute.
Right.
So they've got to be very careful, and that's why Inbred is just clearly comic book horror, and so it's all right and clearly fantasy. And same as Adult Babies and Bait and things like that, you know. And I'm not in Bait, but there is a moral behind
Adult Babies.
Yeah, and it's not just people being tortured for the sake of showing off a special effect.
You was the voice in Adult Babies, weren't you?
Yes. I was, Alan Bennett type voice.
Yeah.
And you think it sounds just like Alan Bennett?
Yeah,
it wasn't meant good. Somebody said it did.
it was good. Well, that's just an hour, so thanks for appearing on it.
No, thank you very much. It was lovely to see you.
I've been pestering you for ages and ages.
Yeah, no, I'm glad it worked out. And thanks for driving all that way.
I just thought he was going to block me.
No, I'm not like that. I'm a nice person.
So, brilliant, and thanks again, Joe. I hope you do all the best. And that I'll put some links to everything, like your website and films, into the thing, but you can find us on iTunes and BeanPod and things like that. Brilliant. But because we're called the Tin Biscuit Podcast, I want to know... What's your favourite biscuits each?
Well, I know my favourite biscuit.
Go on.
Custard cream? Yeah. And anybody that eats... But I think there's cat and dog people, there's bourbon and custard cream people. I'm custard cream. But I think people that eat bourbon are probably something sinister about them.
Do you dunk or don't dunk?
You dunk.
I do dunk,
I can't believe you even actually thought about
it. I do dunk, but I don't know if I dunk custard creams, but I think I probably do, yeah. Yeah.
Don't you hate it when you dunk a biscuit and it falls in your tea?
But you can now get Yorkshire tea biscuit flavour. See, and that tastes it's Yorkshire tea.
We're massive Yorkshire tea fans.
Oh, I think that's crossing the streams.
We see a lot of Ghostbusters.
Shouldn't do it.
It's nicer than you expect.
Yeah. It does taste like a biscuit's been dunked in your tea that's got, you know, it's dropped.
Yeah. It's good bedtime tea.
You can have that kind of malty taste to it.
And what's your favourite biscuit, Joe?
I would have to say it's a chocolate hobnob.
Chocolate hobnob.
Mm.
So I did a podcast with the lady the other week, and hers was hobnob.
Yeah.
Yours is chocolate, yours is custard cream.
Yeah.
I think mine's probably a ginger biscuit or a bourbon, yeah.
Ginger biscuit.
Well, bourbon?
Yeah.
Could never understand a bourbon.
Why?
Because it doesn't taste of anything.
It tastes of chocolate. It tastes of a bourbon.
Yeah. You stuck it up for the bourbon.
Yeah, but that's
the thing. We need to talk about this.
But the sort of thing is, when I have a ginger biscuit, that is it. I've got to have six or eight.
And I do like shortbread as well.
Shortbreads are a bit too buttery.
Are they?
Yeah. But, well, thanks for coming on. We'll see you soon. Cheers.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. The Tin Biscuit Podcast.